Hi, this is John Udell, and in today's podcast, I'm going to dip into the audio archives from InfoWorld's recent service-oriented architecture forums. One was held in San Jose on May 5th, 2005, the other in New York City on May 17th. At each of the events, I moderated several panels, including one on developing applications in a service-oriented environment. Testing and debugging service-oriented applications was one of the threads that ran through the conversations that we had on both panels. And while the conversations were parallel in a number of ways, they provoked very different reactions from members of the audience in each case, as you'll hear. In the first segment, a guy whose name I didn't catch argues passionately that we need to be able to trace messages across service boundaries in order to make sense of this world of composite applications. The panelists you'll hear are Henri O'Toole of Cape Clear, Tim Ewald from Mindreef, John Shuchuk from Microsoft, and Edwin Kodabakchian from Oracle.
So how do we get test-driven development in this environment, right? What does that look like?
Well, first of all, we don't try and build systems as complex as that with as many failure modes as that, because the internet tells us something that they've just described that has got as complex failure modes as that will never get deployed. It's just, why bother, you throw up your hat. So we're gonna build, or people actually do build, much simpler things that are, I go back to my core point about services. They're very coarse-grained. They have to be very simple, and they have to have pretty, simple response modes and stuff like that. Because if they get into this level of complexity, no one's going to use
them.
Well,
we've
got
to
jump in.
Those aren't deployed.
And
exactly.
All the time. And I'm just a customer, okay? I'm not even a vendor at this forum. I've got, property settlement services. I've got banks ordering products from me. I'm going to thousands of vendors. It's all web services, and there's failure modes all the time. And Tim is he's on the money. There is an opportunity here for one of you guys to jump on this and figure out how to put your arms around it, because today it's somebody calling me, telling me, hey, your server's down, or I'm calling somebody else, and it's a mess. It's a big mess, but they are being deployed, and they're being deployed all over financial services.
That's what I was just going to say. Everywhere we go, I'm out talking to customers building these very complex systems.
Yep.
I see it in the military. I see it in the financial sector. I see it in the scientific sector. Make no mistake, this stuff is happening today.
Let me just share some best practices. We have a lot of customers that have those things in production, and Belgacom being the biggest one, have about 300 processes, each process about 150 steps. And what we find out is, they didn't reinvent the wheel. They had JUnit in place for doing their Java unit test. They created the framework for simulating message, because that's mainly what it is. The beauty of SOAP is, don't look at it as this RFC, RPC thing. It's just a message on the wire. You're just sending messages. So testing an application is to have the set of messages you want to send to it, some of them being good messages, some of them being bad messages. So I think from a unit testing, they had set in place. And the second problem you have is, from a production, you need a management system. And there are, good web services management product that basically, proxy the traffic in and out, that can capture, again, messages, correlate them. So although it is a hard problem, I think if you put in place a few you had the same problem with web, people were logging web requests coming in. So it's not very difficult. The difference is the traffic is XML. And so then there are tools that are, your tools. There's other tools in the market that help you put your hands around this problem. I don't think that's as big of a deal as managing all the exceptions when you're programming it at first. I think what we've seen them iteratively is to say, well, we received these messages when we designed the application. We didn't know that we had, we would have this case.
Well, that does kind of tie into the idea of test-driven, though. And I'm thinking here of, I was just... just looking again at Agitar Software's project, if you guys know that. Anyway, so Agitar has this thing in the Java world that drives a lot of data through your code and basically tries to partition, what the input spaces are and make sure that it touches everything. And, it seems to me that there could be an analogy here, to the world of messages, right, that you...
Two observations about that. There are a number of tools that look at a contract and generate, just huge permutations of messages, right? We'll generate 10,000 messages. Although I would argue one of the issues is that the schema expressed in your contract, which is what they use to do that, it is rarely actually complete because of the limitations of schema, and there's a lot of things that are just expressed in code. That's certainly true if you're generating your schema from code, just because those tools are not as expressive as creating the schema up front. But the point is, in many cases, for instance, a schema will say, well, this is an integer, but you know the value doesn't actually go to max integer. And testing for those, that kind of coverage testing is interesting, but I would argue less interesting than more scenario-based things. Like what I really care about is that a consumer can make a series of invocations or send a series of messages, right, and they have the desired effect.
So is that actually simpler then, because you just capture and replay messages and it's actually fairly straightforward?
Well, that's the second part, which is, you know, one of the issues when people start out with something like JUnit is it depends how they end up writing the test, but you need to distinguish between testing the service at the contract level and putting another toolkit in front of it. If I write code that uses a toolkit to invoke your service, then I'm really testing the capability of that toolkit to invoke your service.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be fine, but it is introducing another variable into the picture, whereas that's different from just sending messages to you, whether they were captured or generated some other way.
Just one thing also, going back to what you're saying, you know, I think getting your layered analogy, you have the programming, you know, using code to handle events, then you have this higher level of abstraction, and then there's modeling. At this higher level of abstraction, there's no reason why, you know, people should not have the same, you know, code coverage, debugging capability. You know, vendors, it's our responsibility as a vendor to make those tools as first-class citizen, you know, as your Java tool. And the more developers use Java when we're asking them to go from the code layer to people, if we tell them there's no debugger, there's no console for monitoring, there's no way for code completion, they're going to say, screw it. This is more complex, but I'm going to stay there. So I think as vendors, we're looking at those things that say, well, what does Java has that we can give to people? There is, you know, code coverage, there is debugging capability, side-by-side comparison, CVS, all this abstraction, and you can do it for people, you can do it for XSLT, you can do it for Java Server Faces, for structs, all these different abstractions, all of their layer, have to have the same type of sophistication that Java has. Not all of them have this level of maturity, the industry is going, but the good news is if you look at any IDE on the market, they're all pluggable enough, and that they would enable you to plug in those different type of functionality for every abstraction, and developers should just go and put pressure on the vendor to say, I have this in Java, it's a great thing, I just want the same level at the people level, I want the same thing for business rules.
Although, with long-running async stuff, I mean, a lot of tools will allow you to step into a remote process if you're doing more an RPC-style thing and walk through it, but in a world where you don't own any of those endpoints and you don't have any of the source code and the process is long-running and using queued messages or what have you, I mean, I agree, those things would help.
We do that today. We have a Beeple process engine. The designer tool has enough hook that basically you can send him a message. At that point of time, you can go into Beeple code, put a breakpoint.
No, his point is that sometimes that code's running at a partner site.
Well, that's true today. I mean, today you're going to libraries that you don't know.
He's just right.
So my thing is I'm trying to remove a little bit of the scare of people. I think, you know, there is a lot of value, I think, you know, from what Tony was saying. You know, going up to the stack, you're connecting to more things. There's obviously new things. The same way, you know, when you went from client-server to the web, there was some new things. But I don't think those things have prevented people from putting stuff in production. But they start with smaller system, and they go out, and they can buy your tool if there is, like, huge pain of that, or they can buy a web services management tool. I think conceptually there is no reason why we cannot do the same thing.
So I think in terms of making sure you can debug people and these other tools, policy tools would help as well, right? There's a lot of stuff that can be done there, but my overall point is, you know, it is different from when you're in a process, right? Like, I love the fact that a lot of our core stuff's written in Java, and it's really useful to be able to, when we're using open source kits or things for which we have source, yes, I can walk into that library, and if I have a problem, I can actually get the source for it. So A, I would argue to you that's very helpful, but B, even if I didn't have source for it, there's all kinds of things I know because you're in my process, right, that I can figure out. When the things you're talking to are not in your process and you cannot attach to them, then you have a fundamentally different situation, right?
And I'm not saying it's the same tool.
Now, the interesting thing is,
kind of tool.
Yeah, agreed.
I think a lot of the best practices for this are out in the industry today. If you go look at the way the financial service guys do things, with logging technologies and correlation technologies and post-processing, what happens. I'm sure you've got a bunch of practices you use in your organization.
What I'd like to see is an evolution of federation management, right? To Tim's point again, it's like I'm one piece of in a real estate transaction, there's a ton of parties. And we're all doing different things, or we're all communicating with each other via web services. Who's managing the federation? Who controls the overall thing? Where's the enterprise service bus that goes way beyond my enterprise?
And the security that goes along with it.
And the security that goes along with it. That's where we need to evolve to.
Well, you said the key word, it's federated. And so nobody's going to have the one.
No.
What you're going to need are some tools that allow you to talk to your partner and say, look, we're having a problem here. These messages are getting dropped. They're coming in at the wrong time frame. We're in violation of our SLAs to each other. How do we hook our systems together so that we can debug these things?
Right.
So, for example, imagine that there were some common messages for tracing, where if I knew this was a problematic sequence, I could add some things to the SOAP header that would say to my partner, if you've got logging tools, when this thing comes in, this is one of those important messages that's been screwed up. Why don't we start writing that down in our databases, see what the inputs and outputs are for this thing. And then now on my debug console, just like we're talking about here, I can say, well, what is the status of this thing? And I would send a web services message over to the federated debugging system. None of this stuff exists.
Right.
That would give me information about what the state of that message was. Did it get dropped? Where did it go? And then I work with my partner. And we
there should be a registry for federation.
That was the San Jose panel on May 5th. A couple of weeks later in New York, we had some of the same folks and a few different ones. Tim Uwald again, Henri O'Toole, also Phil Windley, Oracle's Manas Deb, and Microsoft's Dino Chiesa. We talked about a lot of the same stuff. What was interesting at the end was that the reaction from the audience was completely different. Instead of someone demanding the ability to open up services and figure out what's going on inside of them when things go wrong, people felt strongly that that kind of thing just shouldn't happen. Services should just work. And when they don't, you should swap them out for ones that do.
So I'm going to try to turn this back to the sort of debugging thing, because I think this is relevant here finally, which is that I would say that what we've actually heard about today, from Jim Colbert talking about his outsourced billing relationship with telcos, John Halamka talking about, the sort of Napster of healthcare, right, is we actually have heard a lot about stuff which is built on kind of first generation, HTTP, SSL, XML, and largely point-to-point relationships, right? And, we really haven't seen or heard about stuff which is, aggregated multiple levels deep, right? Which is, where there are entities in between you and the other endpoint that you may not even be aware of, right? And so in that environment, which, we will get to, right? Although it's hard to point to examples of it today, we now have this question, right? I mean, because there's this opacity problem, as someone I think said in your panel, right? How do you, where did the message drop? Right? Who's responsible for that? How do we find out about that? How do we know about that? And how do we fix that?
There's a problem with correlation, right? With correlating the cause with the effect. You take some action and something happens, or it in the bad case doesn't happen, and you say why, right? And you have to correlate that message and where it's been, and that requires some system that's got a view into all of those pieces, or at least cooperating systems that have a view into all of those pieces so you can trace it out.
I think there are two aspects to this, yes? So particularly, relevant in the SOA paradigm, right? As Anurag was also saying, like if I am going to build a little application that uses a lot of heavy lifting services that today I trust and tomorrow I don't, then there's a problem in all of this, right? Because my premise is now completely turned on its face, right? However, I do believe that, given that things are loosely coupled and all of that, you can of course think of an overlaying layer that correlates stuff, not necessarily the way you develop things, by using correlation graphs, etc., that are meaningful, but don't have to necessarily mirror all your little processes, yeah? So that's one way of keeping track of stuff. Mm-hmm. However, from a debugging testing point of view that you're referring to earlier, I think that the tooling must provide a very comprehensive, within the scope of the development. So in other words, it has to be, if I'm developing composite apps that always uses services as endpoints, the tool itself must be able to tell me a whole lot about what I have done and in the language that I am using. So if it's procedural, then, you know, in that sort of detail. If it's declarative, using those kinds of semantics. But it has to be comprehensive and within the scope.
But how does it become transitive is the question.
There's this fundamental shift that happens in this world where you had a team that built, you know, a standalone thing. Like, we'll go back to Amazon. Amazon built this website before they decided to do web services, and they owned the whole thing, and they could go into a lab environment and attach debuggers and monitor absolutely everything because it was all theirs. And as soon as you start saying, well, you know, so a lot of companies have groups like that internally, the IT siloed apps that are either a rich client or a web app, but they own the whole thing. You start splitting those up and having them use services, and we could debate whether they'll do that internally or not. But fundamentally, it's different because this group now has this other deliverable, right? Not just the app, they're delivering a service to a different sort of user. And if I'm on the other side and I'm starting to consume these things, we just have to assume that I can no longer put the entire application into my lab, into my debugger, and I have all of it, or that I have access to source code from it. And in fact, I would go further and say, we can't necessarily assume that we could even get that information, or at least in any kind of real-time way. Like, if I decide to build my something on top of Amazon, I don't necessarily expect Amazon's going to give me internal message traces, you know, that I can even correlate.
But then why shouldn't you expect that? I mean, we actually had, that was part of what we talked about with Shoechuck last time. And the notion was, in fact, on demand, you know, and by agreement, you could actually, you can actually ask them to trace.
Because at some point I might cross into things that either are, trade secrets around algorithms or have internal information that's not, like, they're just not going to hand out to me.
Look,
what I think you can do is, in as many cases as possible, if you can, you will be able to capture some messages from certain places in the system, and you need a way to forensically take those and say, well, I don't have a complete picture, but I know enough about this and where these are going to analyze it after the fact and have some sense of it. One of the things I mentioned at the panel in San Jose that I think would be a huge boon to services is, you know, independent of all the routing aspects of addressing, one interesting thing about WS addressing or your own equivalent thing would be having messages carry headers about what was the application that sent this and what was the causality and what were, you know, there are all these pieces that would help you
transmit the
understand those things.
But in essence, you get a lot of that for free. I mean, there's a whole, people don't, in my humble opinion, don't fully understand the profound implications of the WSDL-BEPL set. So, for instance, when you look at WSDL, and let's say compare it to either EJBs or CORBA IDL, for instance. So this is somewhat geeky, but for those of you who know, it might make some sense. If you compare EJBs or CORBA IDL, there was a ton of implicit context that was, as I say, completely implicit in the way that those interfaces were set up and the relationships between them, particularly through things like object references and so on. So when you had a bunch of interfaces and you had a bunch of things, there was a ton of implicit context that no one could ever grab hold of in any meaningful way, because it was all in the implementation of those actual services.
Right.
In web services and WSDL, that all vanishes. What we've done is we've externalized all of those implicit set of connections between services and made them extremely explicit, and though they're explicit in the payload that's carted around from one invocation to another among a set of services.
Okay.
So we've completely externalized a whole bunch of information that never existed before in any of these type of models. And BPEL goes a little further than that.
Yes, sir. I was just going to point out that, you know, all this fear that now I'm building an application using somebody else's services and something will go wrong, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, these sort of things cannot be removed by any IT technology. You know, these have to be so service orientation itself for an organization, it's an organizational behavior. It's an organizational culture. If they are not proud of that, then you'll have to do detective work into other people's services. Yes. So no IT technology is ever going to fix that. Yes. So in other words, we are, you know, I mean, all these stuff, you know, WSDL being explicit, et cetera, they're all enablers, but they'll never be sufficient.
So I guess I don't know how to translate that into, you know, I'm consuming a service. My system goes down because all of a sudden, at some rate, messages I'm sending that service are failing, and I'm trying to figure out why.
Like, so you want some help with that. So the interface. I'd like to take a question from this gentleman right there. Yes, stand up and speak loudly, please.
Is this loud enough?
Yeah.
I tend to agree with, and I can't see your name here, my glasses aren't that strong.
Manus.
But the guy from Oracle here, well, I don't think any IT or any technology is going to be the debugger for a composite application. Is it safe for me, at least, to assume when I think of service, I'm thinking of value behind the service, and it's not going to be all altruism and us exposing services with our partners. We're going to be making services available for a fee. At least that's the way I see it at some point down the road. Let me build a composite application where I take perceived value. So where I'm going with this is it safe to say that the market in which we make these available will be the ultimate debugger? If your service craps out and my application goes down, I'm going to go to his service that does the same thing.
So, right. But short of going out of business, he'd like to
So we have two schools of thought here. On the one hand, services realistically can fail, and when they do, we'd better be able to figure out, at least to some extent, what's going on inside of them. On the other hand, the whole point of services is that we really don't want to get into that situation. Services that fail shouldn't be debugged. They should be weeded out by Darwinian natural selection. Both perspectives are perfectly valid, and there's no real conflict here. You should prefer services from multiple sources when you can get them, and they should compete not only on performance, but on ease of integration. But when that's not the case, and mostly it won't be, at least for a while, you're going to have to do some debugging, and you should expect your tools and environments to help you do that.